What in God's name do you need to solve it for except to kill someone?
That's an outrageous slur.
Google it, mate.
The only way that you can preserve peace is to prepare for war.
Views on News with Mark Latham. Mark Latham.
Good morning, Mark Latham. How are you?
I'm good, thanks, Brent. Really good to talk to you.
Likewise. Mate, it's going to be a big week for you. A big week for you because you're into the GG. So you've got Sydney races, you've got the Melbourne Cup, and, but wait, there's more, the US election.
Yeah, big day. First Tuesday in November for us, of course, is the race that stops the nation, the Melbourne Cup. But every 4 years for the American political system, it's the race to the White House. So those two things coincide. We've got the Melbourne Cup on Tuesday, and then our time on Wednesday will be in the Theatre Red of New South Wales Parliament House having a look at the contest between Donald Trump and Kamala Harris, which, according to all the pundits and most of the polls, is on a knife edge. So we don't know who's going to win the Melbourne Cup. We don't know who's going to be the president. So, yeah, pretty interesting week.
Have you got a tip for the Melbourne Cup?
Yeah, I think one smooth operator who won the Geelong Cup by about four lengths in stunning style. He looks a really good bet. And you can never count out Chris Waller, the champion trainer. He's got a few running. Buckaroo, who'll probably start the favourite. Land Legend and probably Zardozzi might be a good each-way bet. The mare, who comes from the Godolphin stable. So it's not a particularly strong Melbourne Cup this year because the champion horse, Via Sestina, didn't go through to final acceptances, and some of the overseas visitors have been ruled out by the vets. So it's a pretty open race, but I'll be putting my money on one smooth operator.
One smooth operator. Now, who are you going to put your money on in the US election?
Well, I think Trump, really, momentum counts a lot in these campaigns, and while Trump continues to make some errors, and he's heavily attacked by the left-wing media, I think over the past month he's gathered the momentum and Kamala Harris has lost it. You know, Harris really doesn't come across as a serious figure. Her interview performances have been weak. She's constantly off the auto cue. You know, people attack Trump because he's freewheeling and ad hoc in some of the things he says, but, you know, at least they're things that are coming out of his own beliefs. Whereas Kamala Harris, it's all very tightly controlled and scripted, and I think she has lost momentum. So, you know, there's obviously a few key states like Pennsylvania that are going to be crucial to the result, and I think Trump might just squeeze across the line.
Do you see, as his deputy, J.D. Vance, I mean, if he survives, if Trump was to win and J.D. Vance survives 4 years as Donald Trump's deputy, do you see J.D. Vance as a real prospect for the next president, as in the next Republican representative for the presidential candidacy?
Yeah, I think he's certainly the future of the Republican Party in the United States. People were surprised that Trump gave such a young person, a rookie senator, such a prominent role as the vice presidential nominee. But J.D. Vance, I think, has distinguished himself in this campaign. His interviews have been on point. He's argued all the partisan positions he needs for his side of politics and would have been seen of among the four prominent characters, Trump, Harris, Waltz, and himself, he'd be seen as a standout performer, yeah. So you'd have to think at such a young age, he's the future of their party and would almost inevitably down the track, you know, if Trump wins, this is his last term, you can only do two. Down the track, J.D. Vance would be a Republican nominee for the White House.
I was putting things together for this weekend's breakfast shows, and I came across this, and I thought it was really interesting. The last time we had a presidential election without a Biden, a Bush, a Clinton, or for that matter, an Obama on the ballot, but particularly the Biden, the Bush, and the Clinton, was 1976, almost 50 years ago. Since then, one of those names has been on every single ballot, showing how important, I suppose, name recognition is, especially with voluntary voting. Now, with the candidates like Harris and Waltz, and the election, as we say, in a few days away, I mean, Harris is the first candidate, Mark, since 1968, who hasn't gone through a primary.
Yeah, she got there in the extraordinary circumstance of Biden dropping out, mainly because he was towed up by Trump in that famous debate where Biden's mental faculties that obviously, you know, faded away so badly, and even his own supporters acknowledged he had to go. But, yeah, American politics for a long while has been dominated by two dynasties, one Republican, one Democrat. The two George Bushes, senior and junior, ran in umpteen presidential elections successfully. And the Clintons, Bill and Hillary, have been on the ballot paper a lot. Bill won two terms. Hillary was defeated by Trump 8 years ago. So, yeah, those names aren't there, and I suppose closely associated Joe Biden as well. So it's a contest that's not necessarily fresh, though, but unique in that here's a president trying to come back for a second term. That's only been done once before, a century and a half ago. And Kamala Harris, who's got her nomination for the Democrats in the extraordinary circumstance of Biden dropping out because he'd gone gaga. So it's an unusual race. No one expected it to pan out this way. But, you know, these American presidential elections, they talk about the October surprise. The whole thing's a surprising these days.
I just can't believe how quickly it's come around. I mean, at the start of the year, we were talking about the presidential election. Oh, it's a long way off, November 5, November 5. And here it is. Next week, it's November 5. Gosh, doesn't time go quickly.
But, Brent, for the candidates and their campaign teams, I can tell you, it's a long, long, hard slog. It's literally the Melbourne Cup of politics, where it's an endurance race. You know, Trump basically has been going at this for 4 years since he lost to Biden. And Harris, as the vice president, you know, has obviously done a lot of political work and campaigning, trying to prop up Biden. So it's a long, hard slog. One of the paradoxes of American politics is that these are two flawed candidates, flawed in their own different ways. But the American system, in having to go through these onerous processes, normally, you know, a primary, I know Harris skipped that, but the primary process and the very long, long, intensive scrutiny presidential campaigns, it should sift out and you're left with the highest quality of individuals to run. But something's gone wrong in their system where that's no longer the case.
Let's talk Australian politics. Look, this is the story that just wouldn't get off the front pages in the last week. People are still talking about it. It's still in the papers today. When is it going to go away? The Albo upgrades. What's your take on this with politicians and their upgrades and their freebies and their tickets to Taylor Swift concerts and tennis matches and so on and so forth?
Well, they don't drop from the sky, literally. You have to ask for them. None of these things happen just willy-nilly out of the blue. You don't turn up having booked an economy flight with Qantas for a holiday in Fiji and the nice person says, oh, well, we're actually going to put you in business class today. Albanese, with these 22 upgrades, is obviously himself or most likely his staff have had some connection at Qantas management to let them know that he's doing the travel, he's in economy, and he'd like to go up to business class. Now, this goes back to when he was Minister for Transport, Shadow Minister for Transport, and obviously doesn't need it as much as Prime Minister because he's got his own jet. So Albanese, you know, one of the ministerial colleagues of his, unnamed in the media, said he loves a freebie. And the evidence suggests that he does that. And I suppose the political fallout really is that his whole image he's tried to project, and it was only image, it was never a reality, of a working class hero, has fallen to bits with the purchase of the $4 million home on the Central Coast, the waterfront of New South Wales, and now these upgrades, and obviously there's lots of other fringe benefits he gets in the job, where, you know, his association with the working people struggling with the cost of living crisis is pretty well zero. So it's damaging to him that way. In the system, there's always opportunities for politicians to get freebies, and Albanese's been a master of the art.
Yeah, I suppose so, but he's not on his Pat Malone. Do you think it will do him harm? At the end of the day, do you think it will do his leadership harm?
Well, he campaigned last time as down-to-earth, a lot more integrity and a lot more in touch with the people than Scott Morrison. That was the whole basis in which he was elected 2.5 years ago. And I think that image has now fallen to pieces. You know, I sort of one cartoon in the media, very clever, these cartoonists, that had Albanese feet up enjoying a champagne in the Qantas Chairman's Club about to jet off with one of his upgrades, saying to someone there, if I told you the story of how I grew up in the council flat in Camperdown, Well, that whole image of him coming from a struggling background and being a working class type person is now blown away. And I think in the integrity argument as well, the ducking and weaving over these upgrades has hurt him a lot. So, yeah, I think he's now seen by the Australian people in a very different frame from 2.5 years ago, and come the next election, it will hurt him.
Okay, New South Wales Labor has been accused of trying to minimise the impact of a once-in-a-generation drug reform summit amid last-minute changes and concerns from experts over transparency. The long-promised New South Wales drug summit began on Friday. It moves to, it was in the regional city of Griffith. Hearings move to Lismore and Sydney. All but the opening speeches in Griffith, Mark, were to have been closed to the media until a late decision was made to allow reporters in to hear the co-chairs summarise each session. Can I ask you, I know you've got a couple of things to say about this, but why would they, something that's supposedly so important about this, why would they close it to the media?
It's hard to understand. If it's a drug summit that could potentially change the drug laws affecting everyone in New South Wales, well, you'd think the public has got a right to know through the media reporting. So the whole thing has been very peculiar. It seems to be one of those expensive exercises, a travelling carnival, if you like, around the state that's designed to buy some time or give the appearance that the Minns government is interested in this issue when, in fact, the Premier's ruled out substantial reform. Large parts are closed to the media. The Premier didn't even turn up on Friday. No Chris Minns. So what's he getting out of the summit if he doesn't attend? It seems maybe it's one of those things that came up as an election promise to pacify the left wing of the Labor Party, who want legalisation of cannabis and other drug reform, the pill testing at the dance festivals and so forth, the music festivals. So it's one of those political compromises that in practice just looks strange. I don't think it's going to lead to any changes. People will look back and think, why the hell do we do that at public expense?
Right.
But that, unfortunately, today in the era of virtue signalling is one of the things the government does.
What a pity, because, I mean, something really does need to be done, and what a waste of taxpayers' money for something that a report will end up being done on this, and it'll just end up collecting dust in the bottom of a filing drawer.
Yeah, and the other point, of course, is do you need a drug summit to understand the arguments about drug reform? There's a bunch of reports. If you stack them up, you couldn't jump over them.
Yeah.
I can tell you every second day in Parliament there are speeches and arguments about drug reform. The Greens have got certain positions, of course. Jeremy Buckingham's there in the upper house from the Legalised Cannabis Party, and they have similar debates in the lower house. So there's a lot of advocates in Parliament for drug reform, a lot of opponents. The Parliament in New South Wales debates this on a very regular basis, and the summit, quite frankly, is just one of those postures that Chris Minns is taking to buy some time and give the appearance of an interest in the issue, when in fact it's just a waste of money.
An election promise. Oh, hang on, we better do this, otherwise they'll accuse us of breaking an election promise, maybe.
Yeah, that's right. He got stuck with this idea, probably an internal compromise inside the Labor Party as to what their policy would be. Some people there say totally legalised cannabis. He's got some ministers. I think Chris Minns himself said it back in the day. And he's got ministers like Rose Jackson who've argued for that as ministers. So the Labor Party's had to reach a compromise internally where the opponents of drug reform and the advocates for it can at least say, oh, it'll all be sorted out by the future summit. Now the summit's arrived, nothing's being sorted out. People get some trips around New South Wales and they'll write a report that pretty well will achieve nothing.
If I could just ask you your thoughts on the court ruling on Friday that Senator Pauline Hanson violated race laws with her tweet and was ordered to pay costs for Maureen Faruqi. Your thoughts on that?
Well, she's appealing that, Senator Hanson, and that's not surprising because I'm not too sure if you went out on the streets of our suburbs and said telling someone to go back to where they came from is racist. You could say that about an English person, French, European person. It's really a sign of saying, look, you've got all these complaints about Australia. You're actually lucky to be here. We all agree that if you get to come to Australia, you've won the lotto of life. It's a great country. And I would have thought it's a valid political opinion to say, well, if you're ungrateful about being here, maybe you should think about going back to your country of origin. So I'm not too sure that's racist. It might be seen as sharp or harsh on someone. Might be seen as a personal political point that you're making. But given that that statement can apply to anyone of any particular racial background, in my eyes, it doesn't make it racist, but the federal court these days has some of these rulings and it will be appealed.
You know, my old man used to have a saying, why don't they stick them on a slow boat to China? I remember he used to say that all the time. Well, put them on a slow boat to China. Well, and I think now, my God, you know, he couldn't say in today's woke society, Mark, my old man couldn't really say and get away with it, put them on a slow boat to China. He'd be called, you're racist.
Yeah, well, it's under the federal law called 18C, which I think the Abbott government back in the day promised to abolish, and they never did. And we're stuck with this, which I don't think it was ever intended to be like this. 18C, I think, when it was originally passed, was intended to stop someone standing up at a public rally and sort of calling for another racial group to be attacked or eliminated. You know, that sort of violent urging in politics is obviously unacceptable. So I think that's what the law was aimed at originally. But yeah, it would catch your dad and many others today if they were still around and saying those things. And yeah, I don't think phrases like slow boat to anywhere needs to be assessed and judged by the federal court. But that's where we've got to with this thing called lawfare, where unfortunately too many politicians take it out of the parliament, use their resources to make points in the court, and waste those resources.
Sydney Water is seeking to increase water prices by 50% over 5 years to pay for urgent upgrades and new housing developments. For an average household, what does it mean? Well, it means water bills will increase by $235 in July 2025 and then climb $123 a year until the end of the decade. Prices are going through the roof for everything, and now it's water included, Mark.
Well, if we want to have population growth, this is the cost of it, isn't it? In a cost of living crisis, that's a huge increase in water bills in Sydney. Sydney Water wants it. They've got to go through the independent pricing tribunal to see if they achieve that 50% increase. But it's a sign that as Sydney grows and a lot of the water infrastructure and other services get old, they've got to be replaced. Plus, you've got to accommodate the new infrastructure for the increased population, the new housing estate. So it's very expensive to have population growth. Someone's got to pay for it, and it's a product of the big immigration policies that we get out of Canberra. It's one of the problems with our federal system of government, that Canberra's in charge of the immigration numbers that drive population growth, but state authorities have got to deal with it and the pricing consequences.
Look, it's the headline story today, and that is tradespeople and university graduates will have a fifth of their student loans wiped in this Labor pledge to ease the debt burden on younger Australians. The Prime Minister, they say, who is sagging in the polls. That's what the story says, Mark, sagging in the polls and fighting to inspire young voters, said that $16 billion is going to be erased from the national debt. What does it mean? Well, they're going to shave $5,500 off a debt of just over $27,000. If you have a debt of over $50,000, it will be $10,000 that's going to be shaved off, and they have lifted the threshold from around about $54,000 to $67,000. So you won't have to start to pay back the help debt until you are earning $67,000. You can tell there's an election just around the corner.
Yeah, you can smell it, can't you, when you see that sort of commitment coming out of the Albanese government. I suppose it's a distraction from his problems with the upgrades and so forth. But it's also tricky in its economics, Brent, because this HECS repayment scheme is what they call off budget. If it's been assessed as a commercially viable scheme where government can recover its costs, they put it off the budget and it doesn't actually show up in the bottom line budget deficit and those debt calculations. So it's not really going to lower the government, the national debt, because someone's still got to pay for our universities. It's really a sweetener to young people, students, who have this 20% HECS debt reduction. But The other scheme that's off budget, supposedly commercial, is the NBN, and there's no way in the world government will ever recover the costs on that. So it's one of those tricky accounting methods that government has for handing out sweeteners with an election coming up without actually impacting on the budget bottom line. It's pretty easy to do, isn't it? There's no impact on the budget deficit, but you've got a $20,000 sweetener out there for the people who've been paying off their hex.
I had a couple of emails from people saying today, well, how's it going to help Albo? Because most of the people that he's talking about at university, they're going to vote for the Greens anyway.
Yeah, well, still Labor Party.
That's what I thought, because isn't it a Greens-Labor coalition these days?
Yeah, well, the Green preferences in a federal election are crucial to the Labor Party, so he's targeting a certain group of younger Australians, probably disillusioned with him, a bit disappointed that he hasn't done much on their favourite themes, and, you know, probably politically you'd say, well, what a clever thing to do, $20,000 and it doesn't affect the budget deficit in any way, but it's tricky economics. And a sweetener solely for the reason there's an election coming up.
You bet.
You know, nobody's out there arguing that the hex system was unsustainable, the debt burdens were dreadful, or sending people to the poorhouse. There's been none of those reports or scandals, issues out there at all. So, yeah, this is really just vote buying.
Okay, Mark. Well, thank you so much, mate. Have a good week. It's going to be an exciting week. One smooth operator. I hope one smooth operator brings you some luck.
Yeah, thanks for that. Enjoy the Melbourne Cup, and we'll all be watching closely on the presidential results the following day. So, yeah, we'll talk about it next Sunday.
We sure shall. I'll look forward to that, mate. Have a good week. We'll talk to you next Sunday.
Thank you. Cheers.
Thanks, Mark. That is Mark Latham, our regular weekly chat.